Translation. No purport. Shukadeva Goswami continued. Svayambhuva Manu was thus in a trance, chanting the mantras of Vedic instruction known as the Upanishads, and upon seeing him, the Rakshasas and Asuras, being very hungry, wanted to devour him, and therefore they ran after him with great speed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who sits in everyone's heart, appearing as Yajnapati, observed that the Rakshasas and demons were going to devour Svayambhuva Manu. And thus the Lord, accompanied by his sons, named the Yamas, and by all the other demigods, killed the demons and Rakshasas. He then took the post of Indra and began to rule the heavenly kingdom. Purport, the various names of the demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, and so on, are not personal names. They are names of different posts. In this regard, we understand that Lord Vishnu sometimes becomes Brahma or Indra when there's no suitable person to occupy these posts. Supreme Lord Vishnu sits in everyone's heart, appearing as Yajnapati, observed that the Rakshasas and demons were going to devour Svayambhuva Manu. And thus the Lord, accompanied by his sons named the Yamas and by all the other demigods, killed the demons and Rakshasas. He then took the post of Indra and began to rule the heavenly kingdom. Om Agyanata Marundasya Ganaganasya Lakaya Chakshur Unlitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes, blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torch light of knowledge. Well, it's kind of appropriate verse for today. This is a day that observes Ravan's demise. Ravan is demise, isn't it? What's the name of that day? I was speaking with Ramanuja earlier about that moment of death of Ravana. He was telling me some very interesting things, how Ravan was actually finally killed, because as Lord Ram was directing his arrows towards the head of Ravana, he would, of course, be able to slice his head off. But another one would appear, and then another one would appear, and another one would appear. He had 10 heads. So the Lord was instructed, you aim your arrow the navel. What is that name for the navel? Where the honey is. And the honey is where he's getting all of his potencies. Some amrit, you know. And so he aimed his arrow at that navel, and the honey started pouring out of the body of Ravan. And so he lost his potency and was able to be finally vanquished by the Lord Ram in that way. This is the potencies of some of these, you know, these Rakshasas. And you kind of have to know the secret how to disable them. It's something we get to practice when we're preaching all the time, isn't it? When we're talking to so many Mayavads and so many people who have so many crazy ideas, they come from these demonic cultures in the West, all of us. And we meet this all the time, even in India. In many ways, it's more sophisticated in India because they are understanding more. And we have to kind of figure out where's their weak spot in our preaching strategies. How do we get to trick them to reveal their least protected area so that we can get in on them and confuse them, bewilder them, and finally inform them? And we've done it in many different ways in our preaching approach, from the Whigs in the airport to the schools that we established with Krishna as the center, but it has a Western education. We've been figuring out how to bewilder the demons so that we can get them to somehow or another take prasad, chant the holy names, get purified. It's all using our, as Prabhupada wanted us to use this Western intelligence to somehow, when we were the jumping on the lame man, and we were somehow supposed to use this brain. Of course, now in India, the brains are there much bigger than in the West. But at the time, that was the concept. And we did the same thing with ITV. He said, okay, there's this thing called television. I remember establishing it in 78, we started to lobby the leaders. We want to put these VHS tapes all over the movement, you know. And it was like, no, are you kidding me? Television is Maya. You can't put TVs into temples. No, but this is the weak spot. You know, this is the place where we can shoot the arrow and get the honey out, you know. They'll be, because when they're in front of a TV, their minds become bewildered. They just seem to want to be entertained. They're expecting to be entertained. So they let down their guard. So in this way, we convinced not all of the GBCs, but quite a few of them, that we should take on this great experiment and start ISKCON Television and start putting TVs in the temples. Don't worry. There's no antenna. They won't be able to pick up the local stations. And that was how we got started. And eventually, of course, it's been fully accepted. But it took a few years, quite frankly, of a lot of arguing with some of our God brothers and GBCs about how to do that. And I think in many ways, on a day like today, when you're thinking, how can we, you know, how is it that Ravan, who performed so many austerities. I mean, he, when you think about what he did, he was performing all these penances to Lord Brahma. And then he became so powerful by his austerity that he was even able to lift up Mount Kailash with Lord Shiva on top. Of course, he was granted any boon he wanted, practically. So this is the kind of obstacle we face in our preaching strategies. You know, the materialists, they're so good at coming up with all these different philosophies. You know, Darwinism, it's brilliant. You know, when you study it, it's kind of and just an excellent way to promote atheism. I was just at getting a ink cartridge from one store in Wembley, and the Indian proprietor was telling me that he used to worship God, but he came across the writings of Darwin and it convinced him that he should become an atheist. And obviously he hadn't, you know, read any of our other literatures, Prabhupada's books, or he hadn't read some of the ancillary literatures that some of the devotees have written, Devolution, for example, by Judhakarma, and other things that reveal the fallacies of these theories and the cover-ups that have gone on throughout history in maintaining certain agendas for anthropologists and people or scientists who have an agenda for promoting evolution. And we have to find the weak spots. We have to aim our arrows at that and produce arguments and create, like we went up to, Ramanuja and I went up to the Oxford Hindu Center for Oxford Studies last week. And, you know, it's another way of permeating the belly, the underbelly of these demons, really, who just are very interested in maintaining the idea that Krishna is not a person and God practically does not exist. Particularly in the scholarly area, it was when you're, has anyone ever been to the Oxfords, up there in Oxford? How many people? One, two? I found it extraordinarily intimidating. You know, that Prabhupada would even mention that Oxford was a place where he wanted us to actually have a center or a presence in Oxford. He felt that that would be a very wonderful feather in the cap of the Krishna conscious movement. when you go there, you're surrounded by buildings that are 1,000 years old, 900 years old, but colleges of, you know, great reputation, you know. And to see that some devotees who are very scholarly can match that kind of intellectual acumen, that's extraordinary, really extraordinary, considering how few devotees there are in the preaching movement around the world. It's a real miracle. You know, I'm always quoting the story of the scholar. I mean, it's my favorite, one of my favorite stories. It's the scholar and the boatman. You know, so, you know, I consider myself more a boatman than a scholar. I have a mind like a sieve, you know, just things don't, for me, life is ever fresh. I don't remember anything. You know, jokes, people tell me a joke and 2 days later they'll tell me the same joke and I'll laugh just as hard. I didn't remember that they told me that joke. Very difficult to impress anyone when you don't have a good memory. So the mere fact of being almost in Ravana's citadel in today's world, being in Oxford, though every college, strangely enough, has a church associated with it. So it has this amazing contradiction there. It was founded on a so-called religious foundation. But in fact, we found, and we can see it in our institution and in many institutions, and almost every institution, the institutions have their own bureaucracies, their own self-perpetuating agendas. And it's not always spiritual, is it? It isn't. I mean, let's face it. It's just, you know, human beings trying to do something extraordinary and transcendental, but we have to constantly work with the modes of nature. And, you know, I think to a great extent those churches, though they're built with the best of intentions, more than likely, they also represent a certain institutionalization of a religious, not a spiritual particularly, but a religious belief system. And so they're more show than they are actual transcendental repositories of a person's devotion. Nevertheless, they're there, and it still shows that on the foundation of all of that learning and knowledge, there is some acknowledgement that there's some things that just cannot be explained. Like these two verses, for example. These are pretty hard verses to elaborate on. And, I mean, when you consider, when I looked up, of course, I wanted to get some background for, due to my very porous mind, I was thinking, okay, let me look up Prabhupada, you know, go to Google, and I'll look up Prabhupada, and then I'll look up Yajnapati. I hadn't even had heard that word in a long time. I'd forgotten completely that, you know, he had appeared as a Sunu. I think of course, there's 50, we did the math last night, there's 50,000 Manus in a year of Brahma, 50,000. There's that many Manvantars. And so this is just this one, and they're all different. That's what's so amazing about it. When you start to realize, you know, there's so many Brahmas, you know, you remember the story of when Brahma went to Dwarka and couldn't get in, knocked on the gate, couldn't get in. Until the Lord said, oh, yeah, he's one of mine. Let him in. And he was thinking, don't you recognize me? I'm Brahma. But yeah, but which Brahma are you? And then all these other Brahmas came with so many heads, you know, kind of humble the Brahma of this universe. And, you know, it's that kind of understanding of this enormous nature of how many universes there are, how many Manus there are, how many histories there are. They're all different. This is just one of, you know, 100,000 in a year of Brahma. Or one in 50,000 in a year of Brahma. So, you know, it makes, you know, as I began to gather the information, I began to feel my infinitesimalness more and more. It's very humbling when you stand, just like when you stand in Oxford amongst all these old buildings without only 1,000 years. And then you have the ammunition of the Srimad Bhagavatam's information, and you go, well, actually, 1,000 years, that's just a flash in the pan, isn't it? It's really quick. You know, when you get older, it's really interesting how the perception of time changes. I'm sure anybody who's getting up there at 50, 55, 60, 65, you begin to realize how fast the years are going by. They don't go by very slowly anymore. You know, when you're 10, then 1 year is 1/10 of your life. When you're 65, 1 year is 1/65. So it's proportionally a much quicker time. And older people always tell you that as you get older, time accelerates. The experience of time accelerates because you have that much more of experience and memory behind you in that particular lifetime. And to a great degree, I think that's a lot of what's behind Srila Prabhupada's emphasis to us to take advantage, please, I beg you, take advantage of the practice of bhakti yoga when you're young. Because when you're older, the experience of time is so much faster, you just don't have enough of it. And it takes longer to do things also. And you're taking care of things more, you know, health issues and this and that and the other. Whereas you're young, you have a lot more time on your hands and you experience, you get a lot more done. It's really an interesting thing. So, you know, coming back to the idea that we're, you know, we have this mission and our mission is to somehow find the place where we can shoot the arrow to release the potency, the strength of the materialist, just like in that pastime with Ravana. We have that opportunity with looking at a place like Oxford and realizing that the knowledge that all of that brick and mortar represents is just not even a thimbleful compared to what we've been given by Prabhupada's mercy in his books. We just hold so much more information. You know, we talk about it being an information age. We're in the information age. We have more information just in Prabhupada's books than we can possibly absorb in a lifetime. Every time I'm asked to give a class somewhere and I'm reading, oh, they're in the eighth canto, up, they're in the sixth canto, up, they're in the... I got to go back and review everything. Okay, who was saying what? Okay, oh, Shukadeva was talking. And then who was he talking to? What was he talking about? Because, you know, the Bhagavatam kind of meanders, goes around, and it leads from one thing to another. And so it's kind of ever fresh in that way because there's just so much to comprehend. And that's why Prabhupada asks us to read every day, 1 hour, at least 1 hour every day. You know, he also asks us to keep a diary. I don't know of any devotee that's actually done it, except Hari Sari. I don't know if he does it today, but he certainly, God bless him, he kept a diary of his travels with Prabhupada, and it's provided so much. When I was doing the research last night, I woke up quite early. I was very nervous. I was thinking, gosh, I don't know what I'm going to say tomorrow in class. You know, I don't know. This is, I don't even remember that this whole pastime happened. And then, you know, it would be really impressive. Gosh, maybe I should, you know, where's that canto that has all the, you know, all the number of years in a Manvantara and all the, you know, all the different aspects of the creation. I could really impress everybody by kind of going through the genealogy of it all. Then I realized there's no way I'm going to remember all that. It's a lifetime of study and work, unless you have one of these amazing photographic minds, of which some devotees have. It's very impressive. But the essence of these verses are that when we are in danger, like Swayambhuva Manu was in danger. Remember, he was only standing on one leg. I'm sure you remember that from the previous verses. He's standing there meditating on one leg. And, you know, he's an easy prey for the Rakshasas. So we are too. I mean, we stand out. We're unique. Why is that? Why are we an easy target? Because the whole world is just absorbed in impersonalism. We have the unique message that God is sentient. God has a mouth. God has ears. God has two arms. God is a transcendental person. And by the way, so are you, and you, and you. Never was there a time, nor all those kings, nor I, nor you, nor all those kings, ever will cease to exist. And we have to depend in so many ways on being protected. You know, don't worry. Shishirada Gokulananda, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. We have to depend on, we may forget sometimes when things are going well, as they do a lot here in the manor. But when you're on the front lines, constantly you're concerned, you know, I'm going to become a target. We know from experience that there will be troubles. The materialists will always give us trouble. Because Prabhupada set the standard for us to be bold preachers, very bold. Ramanuja and I came up with an idea the other day. Hopefully it's going to come on Dandavats. Can I share that idea? Yeah. We came up with the idea, okay, what would you say if you had 1 minute with a prime minister or a president or a dictator or a leader of some kind? If you had, just by Krishna's arrangement, you bumped into each other and you had 1 minute to say something to that leader, what would you say? And we found a picture of Prabhupada with, was Lal Shastri, that's the name of the prime minister? Yeah. And then we have a picture with Radhanath Swami with President Obama and Giriraj with some, I think, Buddhalese in South Africa or somebody, or maybe that was Bhaktivedanta Swami. So it's happened. You know, we get those opportunities. So we have this, hopefully they'll print it. We thought, what would you say? You have 1 minute to say whatever it is you want, you feel is important for them to learn about Krishna consciousness, to them to get. What would you say? So we're asking people to do webcams of 1 minute, send it to us, and then we'll put together a YouTube video of all the different suggestions that devotees have. That 1 minute, what would they say? Because after all, every moment of our life is a moment that may be our last, isn't it? We don't want to waste any time if we can possibly avoid it, and certainly we don't want to mince any words if we have an opportunity to speak to powerful people. Because we don't know when they're going to attack us. We don't know when they're going to impede us in some way, through courts, through borough councils, through individuals. We don't know. It's happened so many times. I remember the story of this one devotee. You may know this story. I don't remember his name. He was in Lebanon. He had organized a printing of the Bhagavad Gita in Arabic. And he was there with all the money. He was an American. He was there with all the money to pay the publishers to print the book. And he was summarily arrested and thrown into a Beirut jail without knowing what the charge was. And then they told him, you're CIA. He said, no, I'm not CIA. Of course, he couldn't reveal why he was in Beirut to do this printing. But he, actually, I think they'd print, I can't remember if they printed the books or he had the money, but anyway, they confiscated everything. And he languished in this jail in Beirut, which obviously would not be a very pleasant experience, and all the inmates were Muslim, and so he really couldn't chant Hare Krishna in that environment, so he began chanting Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, you know, to replace his japa. And gradually there formed a group around him that joined him in his japa, because he was explaining how the holy name of God is the best method in this age to realize one's spiritual identity and to go back home, back to Godhead. So for over a month, he was in this prison, and he became protected by these inmates who respected his chanting, his recitation, I guess they called it. And one day they came in, and they dragged him out of the jail, took him to the airport, and put him on a plane, told him never to come back. And he later found out that his Karmi name was the same name as a CIA agent who was actually in Beirut, and they had confused him with that person. You never know what's going to happen, you know, when the materialists are going to strike. So if there's anything to be learned from at least looking at something like this, Svayambhuvan, minding his own business, standing on one leg and doing an austerity was a lunch for the Rakshasas. We don't know when we're going to face a similar kind of situation. And so all the time we have to depend on Krishna, isn't it? All the time. Not a moment we can't. And therefore they ran after him with great speed. So, after Krishna saved him by destroying all the Rakshasas with his sons, the Yamas, I looked up the Yamas. Oh, gosh, who are the Yamas? Krishna's sons. He's got Yamas. Who are the Yamas? You know, I found Yama, Niyama, you know, things that we should do and things that we shouldn't do. But I didn't find anything about the Yamas on any search. So I can't share with you anything about the Yamas. I don't know anything about them. But I do know that according to this verse, that Krishna had sons who were very loyal to him, and they did his work for him, helping him to destroy the miscreants, as Krishna promises to do in the Bhagavad Gita. And for that, we have to count on Krishna at all times. Even one woman, her name was Prabhupada Leela, very old lady in Los Angeles, and she was dying for quite some time. I was very close with her, and she had been a Prabhupada Nuga since the late 60s. She never got initiated, but we bestowed this name on her because she loved Prabhupada so much. And so she was in the hospice facility, and she told me one day, she said, "Oh, you won't, Nisringananda, you won't believe what happened last night." I said, "Tell me." She says, "Well," and she's got Krishna all over her room. She hands out Bhagavad Gita's to whomever comes in. You know, she's just one of those extraordinary souls. And she says, "Well, the Yamadutas came last night." Speaking with the Yamas. "The Yamadutas came last night." I said, "What did they look like?" She said, "They look just like the picture." And at the same time, she said, "These beautiful angelic people came. And they began arguing. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but they were arguing. But they were here as clearly as you're standing there, they were here." And then they all left. Still arguing, they left. She said, "It was just as Prabhupada described." You know, I was just so amazed, of course. You're always amazed, because as much as I understand and believe in the philosophy, it's one thing to accept it on faith. It's another thing to hear someone who you know very well, and you know their level of integrity, and you hear that's their experience. It's their experience, and that means that it's probably really real. Probably really happens at the time of death. Despite what all the near-death people say. Despite what all the people who have gone to the other side and come back say. It's probably really real. There's a devotee of Krishna, and she wouldn't lie to me. So even at that time, we have to depend on Krishna. That's the ultimate instruction that we have as devotees. Depend on Krishna and never forget him. And how do you depend on Krishna? You just keep the name, because the name is not different from Krishna. And therefore, everything always boils down at the end of every purport, at the end of every class, at the end of every endeavor, to not only depend on Krishna in terms of our mental state, but in the active state, which is really what only counts in this world, because thoughts don't matter. We don't even get any karma in this age of Kali for our thoughts. It's actions that matter. And the action for the devotee is always chanting the name of Krishna. That's the only thing that matters. And then everything else pales. So when we're sometimes chanting and maybe losing attention, we can remember that there are these experiences, and they're real, and there are these pastimes that have happened. This is historical, goes long before the buildings were even thought about at Oxford, or even the churches that were built. And that we are the receptors of this amazing, this miraculous history. And we can use that knowledge to increase our faith, our Shraddha. And in that way, we will become more and more fixed. And we'll have that ruchi, that taste, more and more to our confident in our Krishna consciousness, that it's the real, it is the reality. It is reality, despite what the world is trying to say. So maybe we have 5 minutes, or 4 minutes. Any questions? Oh, before I ask for questions, I hope that the store is going to get these to make available. I don't know, has anyone seen these? Anyone raise your hand if you've seen these? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Maybe about a third or a half. This is the Prabhupada DVD library. It's the second edition. It's in 20 languages. It's 19 DVDs. It's everything of Prabhupada ever recorded on video or film, put together in programs, the Acharya series, the final lesson, Prabhupada on tour, so many different things, Prabhupada in Australia, black and white lectures that have been made. We maxed it out with all the software available that we could to make it as good, as high quality as possible. And we went back, retransferred all the celluloid to digital, and re-edited all of the shows so that the quality is the highest possible you can have in the stage. Anyway, these should be available at the store. I don't think they are right now. We're hoping to speak with the manager, aren't we, of the store? But in case you're interested in getting one, I've got a number with me, and I'm happy to share them. So just let me know. I don't have that many. And now if there's any questions, I can...